Who in your family gets interested in family history? I wonder, is it always blokes? Is it always retired people? Who turns up? Well, Kate Bagnall will know more than anyone. She's an historian and has just moved here to do the Diploma of Family History course, amongst other things, in Tassie. Hello.
Hello.
Who gets into family history? Who's your student cohort?
It's really interesting.
Sorry, who's your target market? That's what we talk about now at UTAS.
So most of our students for the Diploma of Family History at UTAS are older people. So most of our students are over 40 and most of them are women and most of them are on the mainland. So the course that we deliver, so the course we deliver is entirely online. So anybody anywhere in Australia can study it. They just enrol in the units and do it on their computer at home.
And people get interested for so many different reasons. So what sparked your interest in the connection with Chinese Australians and family history?
Yeah, so my research looks at Chinese Australian families and particularly coming from New South Wales in Canberra, that's been my area of research. But for me, it was actually going to China. At the end of my undergraduate degree at Sydney Uni, I was sort of kicking around, not sure what I wanted to do with my life. And I had a friend who was over in China teaching English. And so I went over there for a year to join her. And I just started hearing about these connections between the part of China that I was living in, which was in Guangdong province, and sort of Australia and New Zealand. And I got really interested in thinking about those connections. And I was interested in women's history, and all the things just sort of fell together.
Because we have a narrative here that, you know, some plucky English people came in boats and pluckily plucked around in Pluckland. But there was a whole bunch of Chinese. There were a whole bunch of Pacific Islanders. There were all sorts of people moving in and out of this land.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first Chinese settler that we know of came to Sydney in 1818. Yeah. But there were men who were coming off ships earlier than that. So the port of Sydney was part of the Canton trade. So trading sort of throughout the British Empire and up to Canton, and then with Hong Kong being established in the 1840s. And so there were men coming off those ships. So also to Tasmania, to Van Diemen's Land and to Hobart and Launceston.
In the end, the ability to track a family history, particularly if it's two or three generations old, because when you're talking about Chinese Australians, they might have been here for three, four generations,
absolutely,
five generations.
Yep.
Kind of depends on the record keeping of the home country.
Yes.
So, and generally, the more kind of totalitarian the country, the better the record keeping. So the British kept very good records here because it was basically run like a prison. We're so lucky. What's the Chinese record keeping like?
Yeah, so it's really tricky. So for Australians who are trying to trace their families back, they're really reliant on information that they often need to find here first. But because of the way that Chinese migration sort of happened with the gold rushes and then afterwards, the records that we have often don't reveal enough information about those people to enable people to trace their families back. So unlike sort of places in the British Empire, like Australia, there were no kind of centralised registries of births, deaths and marriages in the 19th century. So it means that people are really reliant on tracing their families back to a particular village.
Because here the records, you know, and in England the records were the parish church.
Yes, yeah.
Is it similar in China?
No, entirely differently. So the way that genealogies were kept was within a clan and within a family, and they were often based in a particular place, in a village. So we're talking about Guangdong province, so in southern China. So in those sort of sending counties, there are about 12 counties in Guangdong province that migrants came from. And in those places, it's really clan genealogies and sort of then within that a sort of a smaller family genealogies. So it's really, you have to find the exact place your ancestor came from to be able to trace your lineage.
And are those genealogies held by the women or by the men?
Men. And women, okay. And women weren't recorded in the genealogies. So it's incredibly difficult to trace female lineage in sort of Chinese history because it's a patrilineal system. So it's all about father to son to father to son. So sometimes there will be a woman's name as referenced as a wife, but really very difficult to trace female line.
6:15, Dr. Kate Bagnall is running the Family Diploma of Family History here at UTAS now, but her own interest is in this Chinese-Australian connection and research. I mean, that's galling, isn't it? Do you feel like when you're, because you've taken people on trips back to trace their descendants, you've really taken this all the way.
Yeah.
And it's funny to think you're doing an online course, which is so removed, but that's so hands-on. So when you're looking at a Chinese-Australian woman and she's trying to trace her family line, you're like, oh, well, the women just don't exist in the record. I mean, what's the look in the eyes?
Oh, I think it's sometimes really frustrating for people, but it's also generally frustrating because even just finding their great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather's name, because you really need their proper Chinese name, not the way that it was written down in English records in Australia. So even finding a paternal line can be really difficult. And so it's a real challenge. But also because a lot of families were mixed race. So because of the nature of Chinese migration to Australia in the 19th century, most of the Chinese who came were men. And so a lot of those men intermarried with white women and Indigenous women.
This is a story we don't hear much about either. Because,
yes.
Again, the Australian mythology is that there was no one crossed any lines ever.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was the subject of my PhD research.
And was common? Was the norm?
It was really common, particularly, you know, so from the 1850s to the 1880s, 1890s, I mean, really, my research looked at New South Wales, and pretty much any little country town throughout New South Wales, there would be at least one of these sort of Chinese families. Often there was, they ran the local store or managed the market gardens down on the river flats. And they were really just a kind of normal part of their communities. But with the sort of move to White Australia and Federation, a lot of these families, as they sort of went on to intermarry back into the white community, they hid their Chinese ancestry because of the racism.
And it's so hard to remember, isn't it? Post a wave of something like the White Australia policy, there's a whole bunch of normalness that then becomes strange. Mm. And because Greg Lehman talks about that here with the Tasmanian Aboriginal community and the settler community, that before things got really bad, there was lots of intermarrying, people got on, people worked for people were part of people's families. And there really wasn't that degree of racism until it was institutionalised by our own government.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, a lot of history is written about men, and it was really only with my research and a number of other historians in other parts of Australia who started thinking about families and women. And once we started sort of taking it away from looking at gold miners or market gardeners and thinking about families, that these kind of incredible interracial connections between Chinese migrants and white settlers, white women, emerged.
I have to imagine those women were pretty courageous because a lot of the families can't have been that approving.
Indeed. And there are lots of stories of, you know, girls or women who were sort of disowned by their white families. But at the same time, you know, if you were from a sort of disadvantaged background, working class background as a young woman, you had pretty limited choices in your life about what you could do. And so marrying a kind of well-to-do Chinese storekeeper actually was a pretty good pragmatic choice for you. I mean, you know, there are also stories of romance and love things. But
everyone talks about romance and love, but the income is also important.
Yeah,
and
you know,
Jane Austen knew that.
Yeah, you know, making a pragmatic choice about who you're taking as a partner. Yeah.
But also I think there's such an interesting story about prejudice and women's ability to see outside of that, really, to add to the gene pool and to look wider. And,
yeah,
you know, my mum was that kind of, she married a Polish Jewish refugee to her mother's absolute horror. Mm.
Yeah. And I mean, there are also really lovely stories about other sorts of relationships between white women and Chinese men in colonial Australia. You know, a lot of Chinese worked as market gardeners and hawkers, so vegetable hawkers. So they would come to, you know, walk the streets selling their vegetables or their produce. And so there are lots of stories in the colonial press about friendships and relationships that grew up between sort of the women who were answering the door and buying the vegetables and the Chinese market gardeners and hawkers.
Because it's people you'd be doing business with and seeing all the time.
Absolutely.
And the same story here in terms of Aboriginal women selling shellfish to people, and those interactions were just absolutely every day.
Yeah, I think the sort of the interracial connections in colonial Australia are much more complex and interesting than we often think about. Yeah.
And can give us such a different picture of ourselves. Kate, thanks so much for those insights this morning. I'd love to talk to you again. If people are wanting to look into the Diploma of Family History, how do they find you?
Yep, just go to the UTAS website or Google, you know, UTAS Family History, and we've got a landing page there. And we've got a really great contact team that they can call or email, and they'll give them all the details.
And it's online, which is cool, but the bum is then they don't get you as a teacher in the classroom.
Well, they get to see lovely videos of me talking at them.
Okay.
And also my other wonderful colleagues.
Brilliant stuff. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely.